Good evening. It's 7:01 and you're listening to KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, K201HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio, and we also stream live on the World Wide Web at kzyx.org. We're getting ready now for Education Now, so please stay tuned.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love.
Education Now is brought to you tonight by our members and the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Well, welcome to the third anniversary edition of Education Now. I am Athena Melville, your host for Education Now, and tonight we'll focus on current issues and listener comments. Current issues in public education in our nation and in California have reached critical proportions. Last Friday the 13th in California, the California Teachers Association called for action and demonstrations responding to the huge cuts in funding, which means pink slips to teachers, cuts in already dwindling vital programs, and an increase in class size. President Obama says he supports charter schools, but not to the exclusion of a buffet of options. He seems to favor parent choice, but he also wants to reward excellence in teaching. This issue of rewarding teachers for performance is a hot issue, and I am sure we will hear a good deal from the teachers' unions and others regarding this idea in the days, weeks, and months ahead. President Obama has asked that everyone who can go to college or go back to college, which must mean he intends to make the funds available. Getting from here to there will not be easy, but we need to keep our eyes on the prize. When Education Now began its broadcast 3 years ago, it was to respond to the decay in public education, especially in California. Keep in mind that before 1981, public education in California ranked second in the nation. New York was number one. Not only did we have an amazing public school system with a curriculum that included all the arts and vocational education, but our state colleges and universities were free. Free to every person who was a resident of the state of California. At that time, education was viewed as an extension of the family. The way we addressed behavior problems also changed. Our system had worked at rehabilitation, not incarceration, as we do today. Everything changed in 1981 with Proposition 13. Our first show on Education Now was an interview and discussion with William Crane, author of the classic Theories of Development, now in its fifth edition, and his more recent work, Reclaiming Childhood. During the years to follow, we heard from Richard Lowe, author of Last Child in the Woods, and David Elkind, author of The Power of Play. They and other experts all agreed education and childhood itself were under attack. We looked for solutions by exploring model environments in public, private, and homeschools. We talked to amazing teachers in all three settings, and we looked at the attack on science by the Bush administration. We did a focus on women in education, a focus on the children of immigration, and a focus on racism in education. When we keep each individual child in the center, conscious of human development, we watch the dance between the inner child and the environment. We learn that it is not either or, but both. Both the inner life of the child and the environment in which it lives are in a dance to unfold to their full potential. We heard Dr. Jane Nelson address the ways in which we can transform dysfunction through positive discipline so that both the child and the adult are at ease in the environment. This April, our focus will be special education with guests Emiliano Ayala. Dr. Ayala is an associate professor with the Department of Educational Leadership and Special Education at Sonoma State University. Dr. Ayala also teaches and writes about the impact of cultural diversity in education, collaboration and legal issues in special education, and universal design for learning in higher education. And our other guest will be Sarah Rachel Esserman Melville, BA Liberal Studies. Sarah was diagnosed with a learning disability in third grade after it was discovered that she could not read. She spent part of her elementary school years in special education classrooms as a student. Today, she teaches in special education for students with emotional disturbance. So that will be in April. In May, our focus will be on the education of teachers with Lisa Ray Kelly of Dominican University, Steve Juris, Mendocino County Office of Education Mentor Trainer for both Sonoma State University and Dominican University, and then also a young gentleman who is currently a student teacher in the program. In June, Dr. Marcelo Suarez Arzoco returns together with his wife, Carola Suarez Arzoco, as we revisit children of immigration. Many listeners have asked about curriculum and interdisciplinary study for middle and high school students. So I want to go on to some suggested reading for interdisciplinary studies. But first, if you've just tuned in, this is KZYX and ZFM Mendocino County Public Broadcasting. You're listening to Education Now, and I'm your host, Athena Melville. I have used many books and much video for interdisciplinary studies. In terms of video, James Burke, After the Warming, really impacted students, and to think that that was in the 80s. And we're still so far from solving our global warming problems. But there were two books in particular that stood out: The Nine Nations of North America and Earth's Answer. Earth's Answer contains essays by individuals who attended a 10-day conference and retreat in August of 1975. Persons included like John Todd, William Irwin Thompson, Jonas Salk, E.F. Schumacher, Gregory Bateson, and Elsie Boulding. I want especially to focus on Elsie Boulding tonight, as the only woman invited to this 17-member retreat. Because, as we've learned, women in education have many struggles, and women in history. And so, since it's been one of our major focuses, and over the 3 years of Education Now, and because in the this is the month to honor women everywhere, her focus at this retreat was the creation of community. Elsie Boulding has been called the matriarch of the 20th century peace research movement. Boulding, sociologist emeritus from Dartmouth College, is noted for her scholarly accomplishments in three key academic areas of study: peace, women, and futures. She was in on the ground floor of each of these emerging disciplines and eventually played pivotal leadership roles within each. Prior to her scholarly career, formally beginning for her at age 50, Boulding was making major contributions in other areas, most notably as a peace educator and an activist, and as a leading member of the Religious Society of Friends, or Quakers. Boulding has been the recipient of over 19 major awards for her work in peace. She was a 1990 nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize. I want to quote her words from Earth's Answer, and bear in mind now, she was addressing, her function there was to address community. And we're going to start on page 61, the bottom paragraph in Earth's Answer. Here she is, I quote, "This problem of teaching discernment and developing discernment in communities is, I think, one of the most challenging tasks that face us. Religious communities or communities with some religious orientation have not always done well with children. In fact, I have observed many people in the years since my own adulthood, adults of my own age and younger, who were products of the previous generation of communities and had been damaged in various ways. I see the problem of human formation as much more complex than do many communitarians. Just as the experimental and open-minded teacher in the classroom simplifies in one way, the experimental and open-minded person in the community simplifies the product, the child, in another way. Maybe you have to be 54 to have seen enough children growing up and what they're able to do as adults to realize the depth of the problem, how difficult it is to help human beings become whole and function as whole persons through an adult life." End of quote. Then we're going to go on to paragraph 3 on page 62. She says, "I do not share the general optimism about this being a great time for the creation of the new planetary community. I did share that optimism up until about a year ago when I started becoming more and more aware of what I consider the special handicaps we have in the 20th century in terms of facing that creation. We certainly are standing at thresholds. If we speak in terms of axial periods in human history, this is the threshold. Nobody's going to deny that, but we have certain handicaps that perhaps did not exist in the past. One is the thinness of the mankind concept. It's thin for a variety of reasons. Both Saul Mendelwitz and Dick Falk spoke about this fact. We are a very privileged majority minority here. We're a majority in our use of the world's resources, and so on. When people first began talking about planetary community from 1850 to 1900 was the first modern statement. They had no conception of the blacks or the third world. All that has now entered consciousness. So when we now say mankind, we at least know that it comes in different colors and that it speaks different languages, which people didn't know in 1900. They didn't know it in that sense of knowing it with their full, conscious, attentive minds, although in some rational corner, they obviously knew that people were of different kinds. But what we still do not know in that sense relates very much to the use of the words man and mankind, and the language which has been used here this week, planetary man, the future of man, and mankind has to do with a kind of crippling of our capacity to conceptualize the nature of the human being and the human condition because of our linguistic practices. The generic use of the word man simply cripples our minds. But I'm not just making a political statement, although it has definite political implications. In the Sociological Association, we have spent a lot of time trying to teach our male colleagues to understand what the use of the word man in sociology has done to distort sociology. And I'm saying that exactly that kind of thing happens among futurists and among people who are concerned with spiritual dimensions and development. This is the worst place for it to remain so firmly entrenched. So I invite you to remove the words man and mankind from your vocabulary and to struggle with using the alternatives. Maybe someday we can use man and it won't matter, but not in this century, friends. So human, the human being, the human person, humankind. There's another approach that helps us uncripple our minds, and it has to do with thinking in terms of the sisterhood of humankind instead of the brotherhood, or the motherhood of God instead of the fatherhood. The church has been severely crippled for 2,000 years, the Christian church, by the entirely male concepts of divinity. That's why I say we arrive crippled at the point of creating the new person, the new era, the new stage in social evolution. We just may not be the ones to do it, because we have all these fatherhood and brotherhood concepts." End quote. And now I'm going to go on to page 65. Once again, this is Education Now at KZYX FM radio, and I'm Athena Melville, your host for Education Now, and we're doing some quotes from Elsie Boulding, amazing, amazing woman. "Now in the 1200s again," this is Elsie again, "in the 1200s again, there was a new set of social densities because of fantastic population explosion. And so again, there was the need to find new ways of bonding, new ways of redistributing the resources. I'm speaking especially of Europe now. Almost every kind of community that's been founded in the last 100 years was also founded in the 1200s and 1300s. Fantastic proliferation of every conceivable kind. And in the Middle Ages again, women were very much involved. There were great women religious teachers like Julian of Norwich. 25% of the landed estates of Europe were administered by women in the 1200s because of the evacuation migrations related to the Crusades. Women were very active at the heart of the trade network and at the heart of each major sector of life. So again, all these things were interrelating and intersecting, providing a terrific capability. The post-bureaucratic age was almost entered in the 1300s with the dismantling of all bureaucratic structures, but we didn't make it. We slid back." Many parallels can be drawn between that period and our own, but the one thing we don't have now is the involvement of women. We don't have women in the trade networks of the world, and we have very few religious women of stature that we can really draw on as spiritual resources of the planet. They're there, but they're not in a position where they're audible and visible. So we enter this era where we have many other enabling mechanisms, many other new understandings, crippled in that respect, and also crippled in the sense that most of our social innovations still derive pretty much from the 1200s and 1300s. I think Francis figured out a lot of things to do with large-scale populations and redistribution that we have not particularly improved on. The decentralized theory of today isn't that much of an advance, so we still have a lot of work to do." End quote. And then find my final quote here from Elsie on page 68, quote, "The new town movement should not be ignored as we think about communities. A lot of people are putting their energies into new towns, and they do represent an interesting intermediary level. Having participated in the formation of a new town in Colorado, I'm intimately aware of the possibilities for sticking in a whole new political conception of local development and of bringing together, at the very start, people of all kinds of different socioeconomic and ethnic backgrounds. New towns try to create and design spaces for the formation of the spirit, as well as to amplify people's social skills. They try to keep a spiritual dimension. The kind of alliance you get when you're building a new town is fantastic. Local businesses, magnates and their bankers, people from the churches, commune and counterculture people, and all the ethnic minorities. if you are skillful in making your contacts. Women are given a very fine opportunity to do a lot of community design work. The communities that have actually developed have all fallen so far short of this vision of a new system of alliance in contemporary society that it is tragic. But the possibilities are still there. The one kind of community that didn't exist in the 1200s, there were lots of new towns in the Middle Ages, but the one that didn't exist is the gay liberation commune. This particular phenomenon is new to our time. I think it's a transition phenomenon, but it's a very significant mobilization of human potential that cross-cuts the religious and political in a very interesting way. I don't know how to put that into the broader picture, except to say that it's a transition type of community, but a very, very, very important one. And then a final paragraph here on page 69. I think I've begun to understand a way of thinking the training of the intuitive capacity with the training of the analytic capacity that I'm hoping to explore further in a teaching situation. It has to do with taking any phenomenon. I started this in teaching about ecosystems and having students conceptualize, choose one ecosystem. They choose things like the rooms they lived in on campus or the state legislature. Then they had to conceptualize that in a series of different modes. First they did it verbal analytic. Our entire education is linked to verbal analytic conceptualizations. Our examinations are couched in those terms. So everybody, through his entire school career, has to reduce everything there is in reality to verbal analytic. After the verbal analytic, they were asked to transform it into metaphor. The same ecosystem in a metaphor. Third assignment, turn it into color. Fourth assignment, turn it into music. Fifth assignment, turn it into a mathematical equation. Next, turn it into poetry. By the time each person had conceptualized his ecosystem in each of these different modes, all kinds of perceptions had been generated, and understandings of the multi-dimensionality of phenomenon. I could have lectured until I was blue in the face, and they would not have understood it in that way. And there you have quotes from Elsie. What an amazing woman, what an amazing life. And we have talked about different ways of learning on Education Now. She's such a brilliant woman. This is Athena Melville, and you're listening to Education Now on KZYX and Z, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting. And we're talking about this is the third anniversary of Education Now, and we're talking about current issues, and we're talking about a listener comments. And listener concerns. Now I want to address a listener comment and question regarding food in education. And for that, I want to go to a wonderful woman named Alice Walters. And Alice Waters, I'm sorry. And while I find